The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Have healing work to do on race and culture topics. We have those questions that seem to be unaskable in today's climate. Now, we have a forum where we can ask experts, listen, and share. Welcome to A Safe Place to Talk About Race with your host, Sharon E. Davis. Get ready to engage and add your voice to racial healing in the next hour. Let's start right now. Here's Sharon E. Davis.
Oh, welcome again to our show. You know, the title of today's show is Gospel Music, Roots That Drive Social Justice. That's right. And you know this phrase, if it ain't sung, social justice can't be won. Can you think of any social justice movement without music? Why do three words, we shall overcome, put our emotions in a higher place? Gospel music is uniquely African-American in origin from lived experiences. Even Albert Einstein agreed and praised it. What is its secret power that tugs at the heart and soul to unite all people worldwide? This universal language of the divine is not value neutral, though. It transmits ways of thinking, being, and behaving. Is it simply music, an effective organizing tool, or what? The roots of gospel music can be heard in the blues, rock, R&B, Motown, rap, and you name it. Can gospel music help racial healing soar like the movements of the 60s? Well, I'm delighted that our guest today is Eric Dozier. Now, Eric is the former musical director for the world-famous Harlem Gospel Choir, and he's currently the director of arts and education for One Human Family Music Workshops. Now, Eric has an illustrious background, I tell you. He really is a person in as a co-founder of One Human Family Music Workshop who likes the organization that's devoted to eradicating discrimination by uniting the world one song at a time. He's also a social entrepreneur and cultural activist. Now, Eric has been assisting communities in developing inspiring contexts for which to launch campaigns of dynamic service to humanity for the last 20 years. And through his insightful lyrics and soulful melodies and interactive workshops and lectures, he continues to embody his commitment to the spirited, informed, and creative conversation around the divisive issues that threaten to undermine the fellowship of our human family. He's a graduate of Duke University in public policy studies, and he holds a master's in theological studies from Duke University's Divinity School. He's married and has two beautiful daughters and lives in Nashville, Tennessee. Welcome to our show, Eric.
Hi, how are you today? It's good to be here.
Oh, I'm so glad and delighted that you can join us. Well, this is quite a topic that I think is so rich and has the depths that most people don't think about, and I know that you have the goods on it. But you know, Eric, I have to ask you first and foremost, why do you do this work? What drives you to do the work that you do in music and uniting people and one human family?
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, I remember having a conversation with my grandfather one day, and I had done a gospel workshop up in Canada, and I brought him a DVD back of the show that we did. And he looked at this video, and, you know, of course, you know, there are people of African descent in Canada, of course. But you know, this primarily was a choir that didn't have that many black people in it. And he looked at it, and they were singing all of these traditional gospel songs and songs that he had taught me when I was a kid growing up. And he said, "You know, Eric, you know what you're doing is a good thing." And I call him Papa. I said, "Papa, why do you say that?" And he said, "Well, you know, because that music was never meant to be just for us."
And
I remember, you know, he was probably one of the biggest influences on my life. As you know, my father was a blues piano player, but my grandfather was the one that was kind of, you know, he was a deacon in the church. He was always singing. He always had me on the piano. You know, my mom was the choir director, and so, you know, my family was very influential in giving me this music. But they always impressed upon me, you know, that we were all of God's children. And so, as I began to study the music a little more deeply, I began to see where a lot of that sentiment came from. Like it was something that had been incubating in the African American experience for quite some time. It really forms, you know, thoughts of the oneness of humanity and hope for a better day, evolved, in our music, and it permeates, and has permeated the way we see the world for some time, because that was the hope and dream of those people that were the originators of this music.
Well, so you were born into a musical family, is that right?
Well, you know, I mean, I, you know, one of the things that I have come to realize is that a lot of my we just sang, so I wouldn't say that we were. I wouldn't necessarily categorize us as a musical family. We definitely were not the Jacksons, but you know, everybody sang, whether they possessed a great ability to do it or whether or not, because the music and the singing was not necessarily about the performance or someone's ability to sing. You know, Bernice Johnson Reagan said, "We sing our existence," and so when we, you know, when we sing, we do. We announce our existence. We let people know that we're here. And so you know, everybody sang. Everybody was expected to have their own song and their own testimony. And so, but yeah, my family, you know, when we get together, we have a good time. We do like to sing.
Well, you know, it reminds me of the opening statement for our episode and time together today that I first heard from someone in the South. I'm wondering if you think also that singing has more, I don't know, influence, inspiration in the South about if it ain't sung. Actually, the original was, if it ain't sung, we're not done at any meeting or event. Is this a Southern thing or not? What do you think?
Well, I mean, you know, I think, I don't know if it's necessarily Southern. I know that it, It's Southern and black, I do have a lot of friends that are not African American that feel the same way about music because of what music is and what music does. But I know that particularly in our tradition, in our black church tradition, we put a lot of emphasis on the music because it's not, you know, music, has never been just a performance sport for us. It's been a way to unify community. It's been a way to give praise to the Creator. It's been a way to protest social injustice. You know, music, when people ask me about gospel music as a genre, you know, I don't look at gospel music as a genre necessarily. I think genres were created to sell music.
Very interesting. We're going to get back to that one.
We'll get back to that one. But there's a whole history around that and commercialization and how, you know, we divided our music. And, you know, black and white people have been playing and singing the same music in this country for a long time. But there was a time where they called our music race music, and instead of calling it rock and roll, they called ours R&B and called the other rock and roll and different things like that. But that was, you know, that was part of music industry type stuff. But
what draws you to gospel? Why, you know, you could probably, or maybe you do, participate in a wide variety of musics and backgrounds. But what is it about gospel that's really front and center for you?
Well, I think that one of the things about gospel music for me is that it's almost like a doorway which will lead you into the future, and it will also lead you into the past. If you look at the roots of it, you know, you look at the spirituals, and you look at the field hollers and the slave songs and different things like that. All of those things that led up to it, you know, it has substantial roots. And then when you see it manifesting itself into the future, you see it being the foundation for R&B, for rock and roll, for many of the other genres of popular music. And so it kind of is almost a linchpin for our music when we're looking at it in that light, you know, as far as being historically significant. But, you know, for me, to the energy of it and the power of it and the use of it is really what has always kind of attracted me to it. And even when I have had the opportunity to participate in other forms of music, gospel music keeps kind of, it always kind of pulls me back to my center, you know.
Oh my gosh. Is that, okay. So that's where your center is. It emanates from that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I think so. You know, I think another thing too, about gospel music in general and gospel music, specifically, is that, you know, this, for me, music, I've always wrestled with do I want to be a musician? Do I want to be a scholar? Do I want to be a theologian, or, you know, all these different things? But, you know, I think that early on, the view of the philosophy of music that African Americans really held was that music should just permeate life. And if you go back and look at the African roots of this music, you know, people were singing all the time. They sang at funerals, they sang at celebrations, they sang at childbirth, they sang at religious ceremonies. So we didn't really make a hard distinction between, okay, well, now it's time to sing, or this is music, and now it's time to go do more important things than music. Like, we never devalued music. I mean, you know, when festivals were being held, and I was reading this book the other day that is a great book about Black American music, and it's kind of a classic at this point. It's by Eileen Southern. It's called The Music of Black Americans. And she was talking about how, you know, when the kings and the rulers in Africa would have festivals, the musicians and the artisans and the griots would be sitting next to the king because of the level of importance that they held in society. And I think that nowadays, it was more than just a celebrity type of thing. It was honoring the role that artists really played in those societies for recounting and telling a people's story and history and igniting transformation. So
make this sound so in-depth and a living experience. And we're going to be right back with our guest, Eric Dozier, and we're going to find out a little more about really what is gospel music and why do we keep looking at that as a doorway, as Eric says, that leads to our future and also shows us our past. Well, we'll be right back.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you a single parent trying to create the balance between home life and work life? You may be running a successful business, but how are your relationships with your family and children? If you're one of the thousands of people trying to juggle it all, tune in to Straight Up with Chris, real talk on business and parenthood, hosted by Chris Efesiou. Chris is the portrait of the success story, coming to the U.S. with no language skills, founding and growing several businesses while raising his daughter from age 7 to adulthood as a single dad. Listen every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
Come back to your senses. Imagine a radio show that will help you recover your common sense. Host Leah Brenda Smith is a health and wellness specialist who will explain techniques designed to help you recover from the stress of your life. It's all about how you respond to your thoughts. A little bit of self-awareness can go a long way in helping you to relax and enjoy your life. Tune in to Come Back to Your Senses Radio, live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com. You are tuned in to A Safe Place to Talk About Race with your host, Sharon E. Davis. We know you have something to say, so participate in today's discussion by calling 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Or send us an email to Sharon at safeplaceonrace.com. Now, back to the program.
Oh, welcome back to our show. Our guest today is Eric Dozier, and as you already know, he's the former musical director for the world-famous Harlem Gospel Choir, and he's currently the director of arts and education and a co-founder of One Human Family Music Workshops. And before we went on break, Eric, you were giving us some of the depths of information that you have and why you do this work. But I've got to ask you, Eric, what really is gospel music, or what makes music gospel music?
Well, you know, it was interesting. I was doing a workshop in Australia a while back, and I was talking with some of the choir members that I was working with over there, and one of the persons came up to me and was telling me an incident, not really an incident, but just something that happened. They had flown a Black American workshop facilitator to come and do a workshop with them, and so at the end of the workshop, at the very end, she asked people to circle up and say a prayer. Someone said that some of the choir members were offended because she brought religion into the conversation. What I told them is, I said, well, you know, you can't be that so far removed from the music that you don't realize that this music that we're talking about is Black people's religious music. That's what it is. It is one of our forms of religious music. It is us giving praise to the Creator, and not just that, but it also kind of hearkens to an understanding that you know, as I may have said earlier, that all of God's children got shoes. Mm-hmm. You know, that we are God's people too. So it is significant that we acknowledge that music actually represents our reach for the divine. I think that's something that we have to keep in mind. Now, usually when I talk about kind of the dimensions of gospel music, I do a workshop called Praise, Protest, and Purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, praise kind of signifies the vertical dimension of that music, the music that just kind of reaches beyond us and calls on and tries to live in divine space. The protest element of the music is that music and the evolution of that music in the incubus of the Black American experience that was protesting the social injustice. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the content of our, not just our, you know, social justice music, but our religious music, you know, just the fact that we're having conversations with the God that cares about us too. You know, like, and you hear that, you know, even that is a form of protesting an environment that was, mm-hmm. that was really constructed for our, dehumanization and demise. Mm-hmm. And then the third element of purpose, you know, that music, I feel was used to realign not only our purpose on an individual level, but also to realign the purpose of humanity. So when you think of a song like "I'm Gonna Sit at the Welcome Table," mm-hmm. You know, you think of a song like that, and you see those themes kind of keep coming back. They keep coming back. You know, even if you think about the music of Stax or Motown or Muscle Shoals, even that soul music, and so, you know, even in that soul music, people were saying, "Oh Lord, have mercy." You know, it still has a religious element to it.
Well, you know, that's really very, very important. So those three, praise, protest, and purpose. And, you know, mm-hmm. we have a caller waiting, and this is Professor Davis. Welcome to the show, Professor Davis. Well, maybe you'd like to share a little bit about why you have an interest in this particular subject or show.
Okay. Because I have done lots of research on protest in jazz.
In jazz?
Songs. Mm-hmm. And I've collected at least, I have about 90-minute tapes on songs that talk about protest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I did that, some years ago. But now I'm putting some of that into a book I'm writing. Some
mm-hmm.
of the protests and how a gospel came in, which was freedom from the old spirituals.
Yeah.
Where people could talk freely about their alignment with society. And
yeah.
I liked what he said. Is this Eric on the phone?
Yes,
uh-huh. sir.
I liked what he said about we're all God's children. Because that not only includes Black people, but everybody.
Yes.
I like that.
Well, mm-hmm. Oh, well, that's just wonderful. Well, I don't know if you want your school to be known, but, you know, you've done some excellent work, Professor Davis, in racial healing. And,
yes, I have.
My heart just goes out to you and want to encourage you in any way possible. Not that you really need encouragement, but your background is music, right?
Yeah.
And yes, mm-hmm. yes.
Well, I'm at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and there's a good need for what Eric Doze is talking about. Matter of fact, we have a gospel choir here.
Uh-huh.
And white students are beginning to learn and understand more about gospel music as they come into the university.
That's just wonderful, wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Professor Davis is a renowned bassist player.
Oh, wonderful.
And,
well, I'll have to come up to Wisconsin. I was just up in that area, for a conference, and that's actually where I ran into Sharon up there.
I'm going to record an album based on gospel music soon.
Oh man, I love it. I have a friend that teaches at Indiana University in the jazz department over there, and
David Baker.
His name is, I'm trying to think of what campus he's on. His name is Fareed Maluli, Dennis Williams, Nathaniel Williams. We went to high school together. We kind of grew up together in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And, we used to talk about jazz as being, one of the purest, expressions of American democracy or what it was supposed to be. Because of the way it manifested itself in one particular way where you have the band that is kind of keeping the time, almost playing the role of the choir almost. Mm-hmm. And then you have the soloist that is out front that is able to be as creative as they can be. And a lot of times when people look at our music, and I've had this experience too, because my whole thing is to really take gospel music, traditional and otherwise, into non-traditional venues. To take it into and share it with people who don't necessarily have a point of contact with the culture. And a lot of times when they look at our style of worship or even our style of music, they sometimes perceive it as being random or out of control, when in essence what we have done is we've actually extended the boundaries we've extended the boundaries of the music. And I think that was a part of a philosophy that we evolved in response to American racism.
We have two giants in music. You all are going to have to talk more. There's no question about it. We're going to have to get you two connected because you are getting so deep. I can't follow you. And I know you know what you're talking about.
I have Al Jarreau's, the singer.
Oh, yeah.
His father is the minister, or was the minister. I said, what does he say about jazz and religion? He said they're one and the same.
Yes.
Very interesting.
All to do with call and response.
They do. When I invite people to participate, even in the activity of call and response in these workshops, is that I let people know is that it's okay to say something back, because that lets me know that you're alive, and you also confirm that I'm alive.
Oh my goodness! We're going to have to go to break pretty soon here. I hate to interrupt. You all are having a great conversation there, but we're going to be going to break pretty soon. I wanted to thank you so much, Professor Davis, for calling in and sharing. And you two really do have to get connected. There's no question about that.
Thank you so much.
I'm going back to listening on the computer now.
All right. God bless, brother.
Thank you again.
Thank you.
Well, with that dialogue that you and Professor Davis were having, Eric, it brings up the question about why is there such an emotional attachment with gospel music? What is that? Mm-hmm. You have about 30 seconds to talk or to begin talking about that. Why is We Shall Overcome and the emotional impact of gospel music so high?
Well, I think because it's a universal story. It translates because there have been more people that have been on the underside of history than on top of history.
Mm.
And so when we start to find ways to talk about our grief and our oppression and things that kind of keep us down, everybody has shared in that experience, And so I think that that's why it's a universal music, and it's accessible. It's the call and response. If you can, one of my teachers used to tell me that if you can talk, you can sing.
Oh my gosh. Well, we're going to go to break and we'll be right back with Eric Dozier.
Mm-hmm. news, opinion, passion. Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
Listen for MD Radio on the Voice America Variety Channel.
That's Muscular Development Radio.
Every Monday, your host, Sean Ray, will take you inside the world of bodybuilding and health and fitness. The show will feature Hall of Fame bodybuilders, trainers, judges, and the future champions of tomorrow. Plus, you'll be invited to participate in our call-in Ask the Pros feature. And our nutritional spotlight will feature products that can help you achieve your fitness goals. MD Radio is broadcast live Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 Pacific, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to A Safe Place to Talk About Race with your host, Sharon E. Davis. We know you have something to say, so participate in today's discussion by calling 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Or send us an email to Sharon at safeplaceonrace.com. Now, back to the program.
Oh, welcome again back to our show with our guest, Eric Dozier. And we just had a great conversation and some more insight from Professor Richard Davis at the University of Wisconsin. And he's a professor there in the music department and a world famous bassist and all of that. Yeah, you two will absolutely have to follow up with your conversation. That was just wonderful. Well, let's take a look, though, at the gospel and the origins within the African-American lived experience. And, you know, there's something that even Albert Einstein had some opinions about. Can you share that with our listening audience, Eric?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I just ran across some things lately about Albert Einstein and how he was actually committed to really eradicating racism. And I mean, I'm sure that a lot of that was due to his commitment to science, which is should be a truth seeking enterprise. I do have a quote from what he said about, and not just about black music, but also about the environment that black music really kind of evolved in.
Let's hear it.
Yeah, and he said, and I'm using the language of the day. This was I can't remember what year this was written, but he said, and he used the term Negroes. This country still has a heavy debt to discharge for all the troubles and disabilities it has laid on the Negro shoulders, for all that his fellow citizens have done, and to some extent are still doing to him. To his wonderful songs and choirs, we owe the finest contribution in the realm of art, which America has so far given to the world. And this great gift we owe not to those whose names are engraved on this wall of fame, but to children of the people, blossoming namelessly as the lilies of the field. What that means to me is that this music has had an impact, and it really has had an impact on the world. I mean, even from the point when the Fisk Jubilee Singers in 1871, I believe it was, made their first tour to raise money for Fisk University, which is here in Nashville, Tennessee. People were moved by that music. They were moved by the pathos in the music, by the feeling, by the emotion. A lot of times we don't realize that even the Fisk Jubilee singer back even that far, when they were touring across the states, refused to sing in segregated halls.
Is that right?
Yeah. Like, a good reference is a book by Andrew Ward called, Dark Midnight When I Rise. It's a powerful, powerful book about the, the struggles and triumphs of the Fisk Jubilee Singers.
Well, but, you know, when you put it that way, though, does this have so much to do with how it transforms thinking and being and behaving?
I think it does. I mean, because we know the effects of music. I mean, music. You know, music has, even in our society, you know, like we were saying, that music is never value neutral.
Right.
Music is always trying to get you to do something, whether it's, you know, I wish I were an Oscar Mayer wiener, everyone would be in love with me, the whole thing. You know, if it's a commercial or, you know, that is trying to get you to buy something, a song that is getting, that is trying to get you to think about a woman or a man in a particular way, or whether it's a song that leads a charge into war, music is never value neutral, and to think otherwise can actually leave you in a position to where you're not consuming music that actually may be to your benefit.
Well, can you speak a little bit more about that? Because, you know, Eric, it seems that some of the evolution, if you will, of gospel music can be heard or found in blues, rock, R&B, Motown, rap, jazz, etc. But all music doesn't seem to inspire the same way as gospel does. Can you speak to that?
Well, you know, I think that what has happened, and this is just my opinion, when we start to really talk about the heavy commercialization of music, the music business was designed to sell records, period.
Uh-huh.
You know, and to sell as many as possible. So you want to appeal to where you might think that most people are at. But even the process of really segregating our music in a particular way and where we forget stories about, you know, even African American country music artists that were influential on some of the giants of country music, that we don't acknowledge. You know, they called country music country, but when black people were doing it, they called it country blues.
Really?
Yeah. And it could be the same thing. I mean, you think about a blues artist like Mississippi. Is it Mississippi John Hurt? I think is his name. And you listen to his music, and I mean, if you didn't know he was African American, you would relate him to a white country sounding artist, you know, if you didn't see his face, because we have now learned to make associations, around music that are really racially charged, because we live in a racially charged environment.
Oh, wait one minute, Eric. So, yeah, let's spend a little bit more time on that.
Okay.
So from what you said maybe a few minutes ago that gets us back into the conversation of genre, that gospel music may have about three parts. It has the divine, you know, and the spirit, and that you call that praise. And then it has another part where it can gear up, so to speak, for protest in terms of the social lives of people and the influence of justice or injustice. And then it seems like it has this third part that there's a purpose that an individual or our humanity can see about tomorrow and have a role in it to organize around various social movements and utilize, in this case, Gospel, We Shall Overcome, and other songs as an organizing factor around that. So what happens when you divide that into parts and pieces called genre?
Yeah, when you compartmentalize that music, I think you compartmentalize a people's experience. So what I mean, if you think, let's take soul, for an example, which is a child of gospel music. Very, very close to gospel music. And you think about singers like Donny Hathaway and Stevie Wonder, Marvin Gaye, and I'll use Donny Hathaway as an example. Like I listen to a lot of Donny Hathaway, and if you listen to one of his albums, you will hear the church boy in him. Mm-hmm. You know, in his playing, in the way he sings. But not only that, you know, he'll sing a traditional song like "Put Your Hand in the Hand of the Man That Stilled the Water," and so they didn't really take their music and kind of, you know, compartmentalize their music. And so, but what you see nowadays, I believe, is that you have a lot of artists, and mainly, you know, I mean, we have access to a lot more music than we had before, because more people actually have access to tools to make music, and for tools to distribute their music and get it out to a broader audience very quickly. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to make a generalization, but generally, like when you look at what's kind of being given to us as music, it's some of the substance seems to be missing. Mm-hmm. And it's not that some of those things that young people are singing about are not valid, but it's mm-hmm. the fact that that's not the whole story.
And that's the
deception. Mm-hmm. And Marvin Gaye sang about sexual healing, but he mm-hmm. also sang about what's going on.
Uh-huh. Right.
So James Brown, you know, sang "It's a Man's World, But It Wouldn't Be Nothing Without a Woman or a Girl," but he also sang "Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud."
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there was not this kind of hard, you know, if you do this, then you're this kind of singer. If you do this, you're this kind of singer. You know, I mean, Aretha Franklin, you know, was an incredible, incredible gospel singer. And, you know, but even on her first recording, she did a song by Marvin Gaye called "Holy, Holy."
This brings up an extraordinary insight into what the difference is between gospel music and its core, and the parts mm-hmm. of it, and R&B and Motown and rap and singers. We're going to get to rap in a minute, too, by the way.
Uh-huh.
and singers who may be channeled or compartmentalized into a genre that excludes the whole human being as part of what they have to offer in music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that is really something that has always attracted me to and it's even hard for me to talk about gospel music as a standalone genre of music, because I don't think it ever was.
Mm-hmm.
Like musically, it was a combination between these more traditional traditional spiritual songs and the blues mm-hmm. impulse. And so our music is always a combination of something and something else, you know. So that was the thing. I mean, even the spirituals were combinations of some elements of European music, some elements of African music, but it evolved into an original form.
Well, how about what happened when good old Ray Charles, who is like an iconic institution in our country as well, began to sing, it seems like, these gospel songs in a secular way, and many members of the church were outraged by that. And, mm-hmm. you know, we're going to have to get to that, and I'll also pose another question, too, before uh-huh. we go to break for us to consider. And this is from an ardent listener in Dallas, Texas, Ron. And he
uh-huh.
says, how could rap gain credibility as a new music form, given the past forms that African Americans have embraced? Well, guess what? We're going to come back and find out about the secular evolution of gospel and also rap music. We'll be right back.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Listen to the women's side of the fitness industry on Fitness RX Radio. If you're looking to stay healthy and look great, or are getting ready to compete athletically, this is the show for you. We'll look at competitions from the inside out, bring you fitness tips, nutrition to keep you on top of your game, and so much more. We want to hear from you, too, and we'll take your questions by phone or email. Tune in to Fitness RX Radio, airing every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time, on the Voice America Variety Channel. Look and feel your best. Ready to chat about your favorite soap operas? The Daytime Discussion is here with Dan J. Kroll and Soap Central Live. For the past 15 years, Dan has been dishing and discussing on SoapCentral.com. And now he's taking the talk to the airwaves of the Voice America Variety Channel. You'll go behind the scenes with the biggest stars of daytime, along with guest commentary from the Soap Central columnists. And we'll take your questions and comments during our live show. Soap Central Live, every Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now. 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to A Safe Place to Talk About Race with your host, Sharon E. Davis. We know you have something to say, so participate in today's discussion by calling 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Or send us an email to Sharon at safeplaceonrace.com. Now, back to the program.
Oh, welcome back to our show once again. Our guest today is Eric Dozier, and I won't go through all of his background. I think you know that by now. Before we went on break, there were two areas of gospel music and its evolution that came up that we wanted to get back to. And one has to do with the one of the icons in our country, Ray Charles. And there seemed to be a division that came up when Ray Charles, who also, you know, seemed to sing and use the praise part, and I don't know so much about the protest, but the praise part of gospel, and that there was a gross reaction to him secularizing gospel music and putting it in kind of like in R&B forms or in bars and things like that. Can you tell our listening audience what was the problem, if there was a real problem, and how did it manifest itself?
Well, you know, he actually borrowed a song from Alex Bradford, who was a very prominent gospel singer, and a lot of people think that he actually borrowed the song and just kind of changed the words. But you know, I mean, he said, you know, I mean, this is one of the things that I've been struggling with and trying to understand is that, you know, when we look at our history, or at least the history of black music, and I had pointed to this earlier with the whole sense of, you know, an African sensibility about music, like early, prior to us being brought here. That music was just a part of everything that we did. We didn't just sing about the good life, but we sang about the horrible, brutal experience as well. And that's the blues, you know. And I read something in a book, that said that the thing about black music is that it refuses, and this is by Craig Werner, who wrote a book called A Change Is Gonna Come. He said that black music refuses to simplify reality or devalue emotion. Like we're not trying to keep it clean. We're trying to tell it like it is. And that's where that notion of tell it like it is comes from. Curtis Mayfield said it when they wouldn't play some of his music on the radio, and if you know Curtis Mayfield, used to sing with the with the Impressions of gospel, you know, used to be a part of a gospel group, grew up in a church. And he said, well, he says, I write about what is human about us. He says, I know we love, I know we hate, I know we laugh, I know we cry. But then he said that he writes what he writes because he refuses to skate along the shallow surfaces of life.
Well, that is just profound, isn't it, about maybe the roots of what some people would call soul music. It's the wholeness of it and not mm-hmm. simplifying life and not suppressing the emotional content of one's life.
Life has to be looked at holistically. And I know that, you know, one of the things that you wanted to get to, and I know that there was a question about rap music a little earlier.
Yes. Right, Dallas. Yes,
mm-hmm. And I know a lot of rap artists today get a hard time, and just like any other genre of music, people will do whatever they want to or whatever they can to make a dollar, and we've always had to wrestle with our music having integrity and having, being centered around something. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to construct an excuse for some of the music that I see, but, you know, we also have to be mindful that we don't do what we have been taught to do when it comes to Black people. Mm-hmm. In this country is to make all of us the same. You know, mm-hmm. this is what fascinates me about us in particular is that, you know, we have Flavor Flav, we have Kathleen Battle, we have Jesse Norman, we have Whitney Houston, we have Stevie Wonder, we have Marvin Gaye. You know, mm-hmm. we have John Legend. We have people that have made an impact across many genres of music. And what we've had to kind of combat for so many years is caricatures of who we are, uh-huh. and we're not that simple. No more than any other group of people are, and so when it comes to addressing kind of where rap music is going and where all of that is going, you know, a lot of that stuff has yet to be determined. But, you know, like we look at some of that stuff now, you know, and for every person that you can name that may be participating in some buffoonery, you can mm-hmm. also find people that are really seriously using that genre to have an impact on the world. Now, I travel a lot. And I've been to Japan, I've been all over the world, and I see these kids that have embraced hip hop culture.
And that are
really identifying with American youth. And I just read an article recently about hip hop and the Arab Spring.
Right, exactly. I saw it on TV myself. Right.
Listen,
well, you know, I know that there's probably a lot more that we could talk about that.
Yeah.
We have about 2 minutes left on the show. And, you know, Eric, we do have another caller, Aziz, from Kansas City, Missouri, who called this morning. And he has some pretty very blunt statements to make. And he feels that he says, well, this guy, you meaning, he's compromised. And you have to do what Europeans tell you to do because that's how you're controlled. And you have to prove to them that you're just as smart. And he also ends up by saying, what did you have to give up to get what you have now? And maybe in a minute and a half, is there anything that you'd like to speak to or not about this comment?
Well, I don't know what he thinks I have. but you know, listen, you know, I don't really understand what the motivation of his question is, but I do know, I think I do understand the spirit of his questions, and I think it's probably a valid question because we really have to revisit the cultural arts that we are putting out into the world as a community. Like, we really need to be, we need to not be afraid to have frank and honest conversation about our capacity and our ability to affect change in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, and I'm sure that there are as many people contributing to the betterment of the world, and there are many people contributing to the breakdown of the world. You know, I would like to think that I'm doing my best to promote a more expansive search for truth and understanding, and you know, and I don't really mince my words for anybody.
Well, you know, that's very, very helpful to know, and thanks for addressing the question to that degree. With about a minute and a half that we have for our show, are there any parting comments that you would like to leave about music or the hope for humanity or it being a part of something of the divine?
Well, yeah, I just like to bring people's attention to where I think a lot of these three elements were really highly synthesized, and that was in the freedom songs of the civil rights movement. And just leave with the thoughts around We Shall Overcome, and just remember that one little song during the protests in 1989 of Chinese students in Tiananmen Square, people were wearing those three words on their chest, and also migrant farm workers in the United States sang it in Spanish when they went on strike in the 1960s. It was one of the most popular songs that was translated into Hindi at one time because of the relationship between Martin Luther King and Gandhi. So that song has traveled because it's universal, and I think that if we can hold on to the spirit of that, which is not a weak spirit, it's a strong spirit, and it's a spirit that will move us to join hands and move forward no matter what fears we may have. So I just wanted to leave people with that thought.
That's just wonderful. Thank you for joining us, Eric Dozier, and your wonderful in-depth explanation about gospel music. Thank you, Eric.
Thank you, Sharon.
Thank you again for listening today. Please join host Sharon E. Davis for another edition of A Safe Place to Talk About Race next Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We'll talk then.